Welcome to the Flannery Podcast. This is our 28th episode. The issue today, 58 days remaining to vote Trump out of office. Stay tuned. Our nation is divided, and our chief executive seeks to divide us even more. President Lincoln famously said, "A house divided cannot stand." Is that Trump's objective, to bring us down, to divide us this way? In his own twisted way, Trump compares himself to Lincoln while being completely content-free of what made Lincoln one of our great presidents. Lincoln believed that we were in this together. Trump does not. Trump is in it for himself and for his absent Russian overlord. Is what we're seeing the playing out of the corrupt bargain that tyrant Trump agreed to make with Comrade Putin to support Trump's candidacy in 2016 and in this election as well? Is the deal for Trump to get his, all the self-dealing he can get for himself and his trumpeteers while selling out the nation? It's Trump's kind of deal. It's transactional, tit for tat, quid pro quo. He performs for favors, collateral damage notwithstanding. And we are the collateral damage. It is Trump as the Manchurian candidate. Is that what it could be? The term Manchurian candidate comes from a dark political novel and film in which an elected official has been manipulated by Russian agents to become an unwitting assassin in a communist plot to take over the U.S. government. Vlad Putin, intimate to Trump, is a fan of vintage films where the plot is to overthrow America. Is this a real-life plot to overthrow America? Trump appears to be doing a good job at it, but not for us, for Putin. In the Washington Post today, there's a story that the FBI was concerned that Trump might truly be the Manchurian candidate made flesh based on a new book, Compromised, written by Peter Schrock. Let's take a tour of what's not right and real wrong about how Trump has been running our government and our people into the ground. Millions infected, many because Trump said it was a hoax when he knew better. We have hundreds of thousands of peacetime deaths from the virus, and many didn't have to die. Trump's team has talked about herd immunity, which really should be called herd insanity. It means enough people, that is 70 to 90% of the population, have contracted and become immune to a virus so that the number who could spread it are limited. And on the way to this herd immunity, how many people have to become infected and how many people have to die? Bad plan. But it's a campaign plan. It is to lull people into a place of silence and relaxing their fears so they'll go back to work and they may reelect Trump. Trump won't address the pandemic, so he makes promises of a vaccine that won't be ready until 2021, according to any of the reliable experts. The pandemic has hurt our business sector, but our economy was not so great even before the pandemic. Many were living paycheck to paycheck because for too many years, men and women didn't participate in the increased productivity that those profits went up the line and didn't trickle down the line to the workers who made those profits possible by their productivity. We have businesses closing since the pandemic, unemployment, citizens with health care challenges, and we've challenged stock and financial markets. 401ks that citizens hold are being put at risk. Millions are unemployed, many on the verge of being evicted from their homes. Landlords told to just put up with it. But how exactly do the landlords survive if they're not being paid for the rental for their properties? How do they do repairs? How do they afford any of it? There are small businesses hanging on or endangered or shuttered because of the virus. Our servicemen and women, this lately, have been considered suckers by Trump for serving the nations, risking wounds and death for what little compensation they are paid, in his view, because he's the transactional president. If there's not a dollar in it, what's the interest in it? Why would you do it? Trump tried to run from his own words, but who didn't remember Trump's earlier attacks on McCain?
He's not a war hero. He's a war hero. He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
It just goes on and on. Our environment is compromised every day that Trump is in the White House, and thus the air and water are compromised. There's more. Our students are at risk in schools, unprepared to protect them, putting parents, friends, and neighbors at risk. There's a report out today that says students seem to serve as mass spreaders of the virus. Our laws and constitution have been ignored. Congress has been usurped. The courts have been disregarded and defamed. Critical issues, including stimulus, much-needed funds for the nation that could be decided in September now that Congress is back. At the same time, they're doing a continuing resolution to continue the government. But are they going to do it? There's no agreement right now. What are they going to do for the unemployed? What are they going to do for the recently evicted except tell the landlords to just hang on? What about the small businesses? All of that is blocked by Moscow, Mitch, and Trump. Lip service for why they're going to make this a better America when they're doing exactly the opposite. We have a spate of revealed cop killings of black men proven absolutely true. The most obvious proof, the cell phone evidence and eyewitnesses showing how we suffer systemic racism by the police. And the president's answer? Suppress the dissent. Criminalize those hurt by the revelations about the police, rather than redress the causes. He goes and he supports the offending police. He doesn't help the people who have been offended. He doesn't vindicate those who lost their lives because of violent, racist police. He even sides with those who killed protesters. It is what comes natural to Trump, to lie rather than to cure the problem, and the beat goes on. How could this man ever be elected? Trump invokes fairy tale conspiracies in which he plays the victim. It's always about him. Trump does what Nixon and George Wallace did in years gone by. He attacks persons of color when he should be redressing the wrongs they've suffered for so long. After all, this is a life or death issue for persons of color. You wonder why they protest day to day. They're protesting because they want to be safe. Trump tries to manipulate the election, telling people to vote twice, dissing the use of mail ballots, imagining fraud by mail when there is no such evidence. Trump said this, vote twice on the tarmac in North Carolina where the presidential contest is close. Vote twice. Plainly a federal and state felony. But that's what he said, and he's repeated it since.
So let them send it in and let them go vote. And if their system's as good as they say it is, then obviously they won't be able to vote. If it isn't tabulated, they'll be able to vote. So that's the way it is. And that's what they should do.
Barr says he doesn't know that Trump was wrong when he said to vote twice. He doesn't trust mail ballots himself. This is our chief so-called law enforcement agent, right? Wrong. MSNBC's Ari Melber on his show Friday, The Beat, proved that Barr claimed the feds had prosecuted a fraud involving mail ballots when the Just Us Department had done nothing of the sort. There was a local prosecution, but nothing like what Barr claimed. He will say anything to advance the campaign. He has no credentials that justify him as the attorney general. Trump says our real opponent, a foreign state trying to interfere in our election, is China, not Russia. But the intelligence, Trump well knows, says the Russians are doing the same thing again they did the last time. So Trump tries to silence the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, limiting full briefings of what is learned by our intelligence agencies about such interference. The Times had a story earlier this week that HHS, an agency we must defund when Joe Biden wins the election this November. And we're talking about a memo dated July the 9th warning of Russian attempts to denigrate Joseph R. Biden Jr.'s mental health, prompting new scrutiny of the political influence at HHS. This should have been circulated back in July, but it wasn't, to put people on guard to defend against this incursion into our political process. In fact, Trump has made similar attacks, specifically this kind of attack, attacking without any support at all, Biden's supposed mental health. He's done it in the past. He will do it again. He follows the playbook that is Russia's playbook. This is not just dirty tricks. This is traitorous conduct. To have another nation informing how our elections run and participating with them to throw the election undeservedly your way. Barr says he thinks, like Mr. Trump, that's the Chinese, not the Russians, who are interfering. He knows the intelligence says no such thing, but listen to what he said.
The intelligence community says Russia, China, and Iran are seeking to interfere in the U.S. presidential election for various reasons, but mostly they want to sow dissent in our country, exacerbate racial tensions, et cetera, like that. Of those three countries that the intelligence community has pointed to, Russia, China, and Iran, which is the most assertive, the most aggressive in this area?
I believe it's China.
Which one?
China.
China more than Russia right now?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Because I've seen the intelligence. That's what I've concluded.
What are they trying to do?
Well, I'm not going to discuss that to this.
But they're trying to help who win?
I'm not going to get into that.
More aggressive than Russia?
Yes.
Again, that's not what the intelligence says. Trump and his lackeys, the first team of grifters, are loose in the halls of the White House and the so-called Just Us Department, and more. The cabinet is rife with these people. It is little wonder that the midterm elections reflected a public that wanted law, civility, responsibility, problem-solving, and they weren't getting it from Trump's Congress. That's how we got the extra seats in Congress, and that's how we'll win this election as well. For those same issues. It won't be individual issues themselves, whatever your key issues are. It'll be about these patterns of conduct. The same questions being raised about Trump himself this year, and we find Trump sorely wanting. It is why prominent Republicans are leading the sensibles, if you will, to support a return to governing by the law and Constitution with demeanor and with civility. The current concern is not so much about individual issues that may divide us vigorously in robust public discussion, and we may still disagree about those. It's about the overall frame of reference, the true respect for tradition, for law, for the Constitution, even in this robust discussion, and a devotion to redress the tough and rough problems that every president and every nation must resolve. We'll go into a couple of these enumerated disasters by Trump further on in this podcast. What I think best sums up the other way to look at the job of president is what former Vice President Biden said in response to the revelations about what Trump really thought about our service men and women.
I began to want to speak a little bit to what they talked about and the revelations about President Trump's disregard for our military and our veterans. Quite frankly, if what is written in the Atlantic is true, it's disgusting. And it affirms what most of us believe to be true. That Donald Trump is not fit to be the job of president, to be the commander in chief. The president reportedly said, and I emphasize reportedly said, that those who sign up to serve instead of doing something more lucrative are suckers. Let me be real clear. My son was an assistant U.S. attorney, and he volunteered to go to Kosovo while the war was going on as a civilian. He wasn't a sucker. When my son volunteered and joined the United States military as the attorney general and went to Iraq for a year, won the Bronze Star and other commendations, he wasn't a sucker. The service men and women he served with, particularly those who did not come home, were not losers. If these statements are true, the president should humbly apologize to every Gold Star mother and father and every Blue Star family that he's denigrated and insulted. Who the heck does he think he is? Is it true? Well, we've heard from his own mouth his characterizations of American era John McCain as a loser in 2015. Donald Trump said he was not a war hero. I like people who weren't captured. Good for him. And his dismissal of the traumatic brain injury suffered by troops serving in Iraq as mere headaches not too long ago. He stood by failing to take action or even raise the issue with Vladimir Putin while the Kremlin puts bounties on the heads of American troops in Afghanistan. It's a sacred duty. And you're tired of hearing me say this. Those you've been covering me for years know I get in trouble for saying, but I'm going to say it again. We have many obligations as a government. We only have one truly sacred obligation. Equip and support those who we send into harm's way. Care for their families while they're gone and care for them when they're home. That's the only truly sacred obligation a government has. Duty, honor, country. These are values that drive our service members. It's an all-voluntary outfit. President Trump has demonstrated he has no sense of service, no loyalty to any cause other than himself. If I have the honor of being the next commander-in-chief, I will ensure that our American heroes know I'll have their backs, honor their sacrifice, and those who've been injured will be in military parades. And always caution not to lose my temper. This may be as close as I've come, this campaign. Just a marker of how deeply President Trump and I disagree about the role of the President of the United States of America.
Stay tuned. Of late, there has been some talk about different realities. There are not two realities, no more than there is a right to two votes for any one person. In 1984, Orwell's work, there's a horrible scene where a man's intellect and will is overcome so that he admits and believes 2 + 2 = 5.
An effort of the will. Do you remember writing in your diary, freedom is the freedom to say 2 + 2 = 4?
Yes.
How many fingers am I holding up, Miss? And if the party says there are not four, but five, then how many?
Five.
No. That's no use. You're lying. How many fingers, please?
That's not another reality. That's a trick and torture of the will. We think of Jonestown when all of those crazed followers drank Kool-Aid and died. In one of my earlier podcasts, we looked at Jonestown, the documents and videos, and found that some refused to drink the Kool-Aid when others were doing it willingly. And that included the children, and they were injected and killed when they wouldn't commit suicide voluntarily themselves. In this scene in the movie, the person is coerced and tortured until he says what Big Brother wanted to hear said. All of us by now have run into those Trump ditto heads who say the wrong thing, what's not true. They don't all suffer for it, but they all say it. 40% of our population is in that groove. That is a scary number. Even if it means it's not enough to win an election, to think that there are so many people in this fair republic who have this tortured thinking. Here in Virginia, we have a stellar example of the thinking of 2 + 2 = 5. It's in the rural southwest section of our state, from east of Lynchburg to the Cumberland Gap. Mining territory, described as the brightest red corner for anyone who travels the state for votes. You'll see plenty of Trump signs down there. And in the last election, 2016, 80% of the voters went for Trump over Hillary in 2016. But what did they think? They thought, because they're Trumpites, they were immune from the virus down there, that it was like a flu, that the dangers they heard were a big hoax. Now they're finding 229 new infections every day from the virus. One local lawyer reportedly said his friends made him feel like a sissy for wearing a mask at the local hardware store. There's some real poor residents down there as well. That's what happens to people who think 2 + 2 = 5, who follow Trump. Let's talk a little bit about frames of reference. Stay tuned. Plainly, there are two different frames of reference, not two different realities. There's Joe Biden's frame and Donald Trump's frame. Sometimes it's fun to invoke a scientific principle as a metaphor for more common goings-on. I'm going to make an excursion like that now. And who else should we do it with but Albert Einstein? He spent a lot of time in what he called thought experiments. Didn't go to a lab. He sat and he thought. He made notes. And he put himself in different frames of reference himself, in his mind. And he studied what his mind observed, and particularly the relative differences his mind observed. And that's how you become a world-renowned scientist. He's known for his work on relativity, which is the relative differences between frames of reference. And to invoke his work is to make some withering fear of understanding anything Einstein could say. But you needn't be. Professor Einstein spent a lot of his life making clear what he meant by relativity, what he found. You can get the book, Einstein on Relativity, his description of his best findings, and in a language that almost anyone can understand. You can't read it like it's a comic book or even a novel. You have to read it carefully, but it's approachable. Now, before Einstein, Galileo considered the principle of relativity in the mid-17th century. Most scientists build on what's gone before, and there's no exception here for Einstein, to learn, to duplicate, to improve. Now let's update Galileo's idea and imagine, because he had his own way of thinking about these things, imagine we're dealing with a flying plane. Galileo didn't have one of those. Let's put Joe and Don in two different positions. Joe is on the plane. No, Galileo didn't use a plane for his thought experiments. By contrast, Don is left standing still on the ground. Good place for him. Joe and Don agreed to synchronize their watches. At a certain time, Joe sits in his seat on the plane. Don can see Joe through the window on a plane traveling at 100 miles an hour in a straight line without any acceleration. They both agree that Joe sat in his seat at 2:15 p.m. The time is arbitrary. I just chose that time. Joe gets up from his seat to see if Jill has settled in. Jill is 5 seats ahead of his position. And he visits her. And at 2:17 p.m., just 2 minutes later, Joe returns to his seat. Now, I know you expect I'm going to ask you some algebra question, but I'm not. It's really simple. In Joe's frame of reference, he traveled a few feet forward and returned to a seat where he had been. That was the entire distance he traveled. But in Don's frame of reference on the ground, Joe has traveled miles, not feet, as Don watched as the entire plane move forward, a dramatic difference from 2:15 p.m. when he started observing it to 2:17 p.m. Joe and Don cannot agree to where they are in space. They both have different frames of reference. Einstein removed the idea of fixed locations in space. Of course he did, otherwise it would be easily accessible what he found out. He also removed the idea of fixed time. Now stay with me. Einstein thought not only could the three dimensions in space change, so could a fourth dimension, time. He also wanted to up the speed to the speed of light. So Joe is on, this time, a fast-moving train. We gave up the plane. Einstein rode trains a lot, and he really did use trains for his example. And if you get his book, that's what you'll find. This was his choice. Don is on the railroad embankment. He's kind of parked again, like he was in the first example. If the train is moving and lightning strikes the front and back of the moving train, Joe sees the lightning ahead before the lightning behind because the train is moving forward at a velocity. Now, but Don, who's not on the train, with mirrors at right angles so that he can see in both directions, the lightning appears to be simultaneous. There's more. Time progresses slower on a lightning speed train. Distances appear shorter in the direction of travel. Don's vantage point makes it impossible to see or know what Joe sees and knows. This could be a political quip that Don is standing still, full of inertia, unmoving, and Joe is moving forward at an amazing speed, the speed of light. And I think for the good of the nation, that's not a terrible metaphor. There's only one reality, but your vantage point, whether dormant or high-speed motion, changes what you see and what you've done. Now let's consider a couple of frames of reference about our what's going on in America right now. Stay tuned. A life is a work of art, and service to others as they give back to us at the same time is what makes us social, a society, a civilization. It's how we treat each other, what we do for each other. Service to secure our nation against enemies who would do us harm is a necessary and demanding element of preserving and protecting our civilization. Only the trivial or traitorous among us act otherwise. Yes, I mean Trump. And I do mean the military. We cast out those who betray this sacred trust, out of the family that makes us a democratic nation. We have that opportunity in November. We have that opportunity with Trump. In our family, whether it's the nuclear one or the entire family of man and woman and child in America, we celebrate those who gave of their time and risked their lives so that we could have a life of freedom and fulfillment. Every family has someone or knows someone who has served as best they can. You can't lead America if you don't embrace this truth as the ground of our being as a nation. This has to be your frame of reference, that we risk to preserve and protect who we are and give hope to the rest of the world for the character we daily demonstrate among we, the people. Let's talk a little bit more about the pandemic that Trump ignores, indeed that he promotes. Stay tuned. We've been talking about the spread of the virus, but it's beginning to look like our young people are world-class spreaders of the virus. In a Times-sponsored study of 1,500 American colleges and universities, the investigative team uncovered 51,000 infections and 60 deaths since the pandemic began. All this talk about how the young are invulnerable is just not true, and it can affect them in ways we don't know. Their young organs may be affected the whole rest of their lives. We've already seen some older people have problems affecting their heart, even after they've survived the infection, if you will. They haven't actually survived the damage of the infection. And there have been spikes in recent weeks in schools as they reopen. Where are the results the worst? Well, Auburn, Alabama, Ames, Iowa, Statesboro, Georgia. And you can get the entire list online. Iowa has canceled its first home game. Disappointing. Get this, 25,000 fans. Can you imagine what a challenge that is to distancing and being safe? California State University, Chico, sent students home to take online classes. One sad irony is that some of the cases are traced to medical schools, and in turn the disease is connected to the medical services that these students are providing nearby. That's a terrible dilemma. So that thing Don likes to say about the young being immune or shaking it off, wipe that wrong-headed nonsense right out of your mind, because he doesn't know what he's talking about. Or, to put it another way, he knows exactly what he's talking about, and he wants to mislead us, lull us to go to work because he thinks any amount of money that goes into the economy will help get him reelected. As if the entire public is going to ignore the fact that people are getting infected and dying, that our children may be getting infected and dying in the weeks ahead for those who don't distance themselves or do learning at a distance. We have a bill before Congress that might help those struggling with the pandemic. But Moscow Mitch won't bring it up. I've already mentioned it once. We also have a justice bill before Congress, but Moscow Mitch won't take up that bill either. Let's talk a little bit about what's happening in the street.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police.
There are two reasons that I can think of that Trump doesn't want to have a dialogue with protesters. First, the protest is about police violence against black, and Trump is a racist, who is at best indifferent to how persons of color are treated by bigoted police. Bad starting point. Second, Trump has embraced a campaign, as he did in 2016, that he calls law and order, that is truly fascist, that defies the law and prefers disorder, to frighten people into supporting him in his election. That's his frame of reference. By contrast, Biden seeks a dialogue of those asking to resolve questions of police tolerance and to involve both them and the police and any other stakeholders in the process. In other words, to really solve the problem, to address it, analyze it, and resolve it. Biden says, and he did when he was in Kenosha, Wisconsin, says we're at an inflection point when we can turn toward resolution and away from pain, move with hope toward comity. Working together.
I think we've reached an inflection point in American history. People are beginning to figure out who we are as a country. This is not who we are.
It's an issue that must be dealt with as we uncover one by one additional incidents of police violence indifferent to the life and well-being of black persons who may or may not be implicated in any crime. And very few crimes, as you know, have as a penalty death. So when they're inflicting death on a person, for example, when we're talking about George Floyd, we're talking about a fella. The charge was that he had a bogus $20 bill. That's not a death penalty case. And I don't know how you prove it either. Because if it's a phony 20, how do you prove that you know it was a phony 20? The fact that these incidents keep arising reveals that they're not anecdotal, that they reflect a pattern of discrimination and violence in America, and an embarrassment. It goes back to the original sin of this country when we promised that all people were equal, created equal, and that we would treat them that way, and we haven't. Breonna Taylor has been much mentioned in the news, and she's one of those stories. Each one has its own details, and this one is particularly offensive. It resulted in her death on March 21st, 2020, and it never had to happen. She was a full-time EMT in Louisville, Kentucky, and her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, lived with her. They were going to be married. They had a ring. They even had tiny little sneakers for the first child they were going to have. Breonna was fatally shot in her apartment shortly after midnight. When three plainclothes narcotics officers driving unmarked cars broke into her house without knocking, they used a battering ram to enter. There's a reason that most warrants may only be delivered after sunrise and before sunset, because being able to see what you're doing is important. I tried, but I couldn't find the warrant to see what it said about when they could serve the warrant, what the warrant said they could do. I presume it's available. I just couldn't find it. But I may be wrong. There was a discussion whether it was a no-knock warrant or not. I'd be concerned if the warrant got altered when the shooting went down. Supposedly, they were investigating whether a USPS package containing drugs went to this apartment and then the drugs were taken elsewhere. Now, I used to prosecute drug cases, so this is a little troubling what they're saying, if this is what the warrant says. In my experience, those packages are examined at the Postal Service by drug-sniffing dogs and intercepted for containing drugs and then delivered and the recipient questioned at that ideal moment. Now, it turns out a postal inspector has said he told the police before the search that no such packages were being received at that address. So they were going there on an instinct, and they figured the success of their search would bathe them in immunity from scrutiny. Well, let's talk about what happened. Kenneth couldn't tell they were police when he heard all the noise because they were plain clothes. They wore plain clothes. He thought they were intruders. Kenneth had a license for a gun, and he shot at one intruder, an officer, and he hit him in the leg. These three officers then opened fire in a random and dangerous manner, indifferent to who or what they might hit. There were 20 rounds fired, perhaps more. They hit objects in the living room, dining room, kitchen, hallway, bathroom, and both bedrooms. One officer allegedly fired blindly from outside the residence through a window with closed blinds and curtains. Brianna was shot at least 8 times, and she was dead at the scene. No drugs were found in the apartment. The police report afterwards, hold on to your horses, reported that Brianna had no injuries and there was no forced entry. None of the narcs wore a body camera. But they had to charge someone. So who did they charge? They charged Brianna's live-in boyfriend, Walker, with first-degree assault and attempted murder of a police officer. Walker's counsel is claiming self-defense, given the wild shooting by the officers. Sounds like a powerful defense. And after several steps, he was released, and those charges have been dismissed. But the community screams, arrest the cops that killed Brianna Taylor. They're right, arrest the cops. That would be following the law and restoring order. That's just one example. There are more, there are many more. And we are going to bleed, metaphorically, until we resolve this problem. The incumbent has no interest in doing that. He's trying to use it as an issue to get reelected. Biden wants everybody to sit down and work this out. Biden has the better course. Now, next we have a special interview. From time to time, I do sketches, and I did one of a pig, an ink drawing on a stretch canvas with a pink oil wash, with the pig saying, I know what they say about Trump, but we pigs are smart, and he is not. Isn't that something that a pig would say that? Beverly Markland said she wanted to buy the pig canvas, and I said, how'd you like to talk about it on this week's podcast? So we're going to finish with a treat, a conversation with Beverly from North Carolina. So listen to this. I think you'll enjoy it. Well, we have with us today Beverly Markland. She's down in King, North Carolina, and we're kind of Twitter friends, and she's paid me the honor of buying one of my artworks. So she has an original canvas almost in the mail from Flannery. So, Beverly, glad you could join us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Beverly, you are born and bred North Carolinian. Is that your background?
I sure am. Tar Heel.
Tar Heel. Well, we have family in North Carolina. Yankee from the North married a Southern belle. My wife Holly is a Southern girl, and I grow deeper South every day. So, but you're a musician, aren't you? Is that right?
Yes, I am.
And you started when you were like seventh grade, didn't you tell
seventh
me?
Grade. Mm-hmm. Seventh grade, been playing since seventh grade.
So what kind of music do you play?
We have a little group, and we play bluegrass, country, and gospel.
Now, are you able to perform during this pandemic?
We had to shut our barn down. We were open for 2 weeks for the start of the season, And then the pandemic hit, so we've been closed ever since.
So the pandemic is real in lots of ways for you, not just the danger of infection, but even affecting the thing that you enjoy the most, playing music.
Absolutely right.
So in the seventh grade, what instrument were you playing in the seventh grade?
Oh, I was a drummer in the marching band.
That sounds perfect. So did you march down Main Street somewhere?
Sure did.
Where? What Main Street?
The Winston-Salem Parade, the big parade they had in Winston-Salem every year.
Oh, Winston-Salem, that's a lot bigger than King, North Carolina, isn't it?
A lot bigger.
So you've become a small-town girl by now.
Yeah, I have.
So tell me something about the politics of where you are now. Are there many political signs up?
I haven't seen that many political signs around here. You know, North Carolina is such a swing state. You know, you don't know exactly which way it's going to go. But I haven't really seen that many signs around up here. And they have sent out our mail-in ballots. They sent them out on the 4th. So I'm hoping to get mine in the mail any time now.
Yeah, so this is our first wave. But I assume that you're not going to follow the president's recommendation and vote twice.
Oh, oh Lord. No, I'm not going to be doing that.
Well, where you are in King, North Carolina, small town, do you have any sense of whether your neighbors would shun your support of Biden or they're comfortable with it? I mean, if you're playing music, you must know a lot of people in the area.
Well, I think, well, the ones that live closest to me around here, they are definitely for Biden.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, so along with me and about 4 or 5 others, yeah, they're definitely Biden fans.
Now, you know, I said I presume that you're for Biden because I've seen your comments on Twitter and stuff like that. So I don't mean to have anybody think that I would presume that you're for someone just because I said it. But do you have a reason why you're for Biden as opposed to against Trump?
Well, Biden just is exactly the opposite of what Trump is. Biden shows empathy, compassion. He's got a good head on his shoulders. He's been familiar with the military, and he just would make the right decision, especially with the pandemic. If he had been in there, we would never be in the mess we are in, I don't think.
I believe that. What I've noted in Virginia, and we Democrats want to take credit for winning elections here, but I thought as much we were winning elections, not just because of how good the candidates were, but because the tenor of their campaign was civilized and respectful and wasn't laden with lies and accusations. And I think America's had enough of that, particularly when they found that these fights are not legitimate. You know, there's perhaps to be expected that public speech is going to be robust, but it should be truthful and it shouldn't be misleading and it shouldn't be hurtful to the people that you're supposedly trying to lead.
Exactly.
Yeah. So now, one of the reasons we're having this conversation is I thought it would be fun to ask you why you would find interesting one of my sketches online and offer to buy it so that you're going to own an original Flannery on real canvas, stretched by my hand, although it's only a line drawing. So next time we'll have to get you oils and stuff like that, although the background's an oil wash. So why that picture?
I don't know. I was just drawn to it when I saw it. Like I said, I've seen a lot of your works that you put on Twitter, which are just fabulous. And I thought, well, I didn't know if you would ever sell one, so I just thought I'd ask you.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I always tell people you can't win the argument you don't make, and I suppose you can't get an answer if you don't ask a question. So
that's I'll just take a chance and ask him and see what he says.
Yeah. So what do you think should be the first thing that should happen should Biden win on November 3rd?
Oh boy. He needs to jump in and repeal all of these executive actions that Trump has done. And if they have to, I don't know, if they have to impeach Trump again or what, just I think Trump needs to be in prison where he needs to be.
Yeah, well, as a recovering federal and state prosecutor and a guy who's followed politics a lot, I couldn't agree more. Of all the music you've done from the seventh grade forward, and now, you know, say you're 35 years of age at least. what is your favorite song of all time, of all the different songs that you've played, heard, done? What do you like?
Well, it would have to be Amazing Grace. because that was that song was written by a slave owner, and it's just a great song, and we do it. We used to go to nursing homes quite a bit every month, and we sort of had to slow down on that now, but we'll forget. We were playing one day in a nursing home in the cafeteria area, and when we got through, we were packing up our stuff to leave. There was one little old lady sitting by herself in the corner in the back row, and she was still singing Amazing Grace.
That's beautiful. What a wonderful story. Beverly, I want to thank you for joining us. It's fun talking to you over, voice to voice as opposed to tapping on a computer. So thanks for joining us.
Oh, it was my great pleasure, great honor. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having a Flannery original.
I can't wait to get it.
It'll be in the mail tomorrow.
Okay, thank you so much.
Join us next week for another episode. We may be on the road for that episode. See you then. Bye-bye.